Greetings, salutations, everybody. Welcome to the Friday Filibuster. I'm Dave Johnson, joined by Mac McIntyre.
I can do.
Loomis.
Hello.
And Eric Astroslager.
Hello.
And we're going to get right to it because, gentlemen, it's been pretty polarizing, and I've heard a lot of people hate on the game, but I've been just addicted to Resident Evil 6 in a big way. I don't know if you guys – I've really kind of gotten to that series after Resident Evil 4, which I consider the greatest game ever made, but have you guys – is that up anyone's alley besides mine?
I haven't played it since PlayStation 1,
nice.
I think.
Yeah, a little bit's
Resident
changed.
Evil 2, maybe?
A little bit's changed.
I haven't played it since Resident Evil 2, neither.
All right. And Eric,
I played 4. I have access to 5 through my PlayStation Plus membership. I got to play that sometime.
Yeah.
But, nah.
All right.
You seem to have the ability to forgive certain, gameplay quirks that other people don't.
Yeah, I think.
Just to kind of get what you want.
That's true. that's true. That's, yeah, Washington did take a lesson from me with all his fiscal cliff talks, my Resident Evil 6 experience. But yeah, it's definitely, they definitely went kind of overcooked blockbuster movie. I mean, some of the stuff they put together is pretty insane, but the core of it is just, for me, it's just a ton of fun. It's like, it sounds simple, but like a quick shot to a zombie's head staggers him, and then you run up and you give him like a British bulldog. or you kick their heads off. And it's just that melee shooting combination, which I enjoyed in 4 and 5, is largely preserved here. So it's just a kind of a fun thing for me to play. So, but I'm not close to done. It's such a huge game.
Isn't it essentially like 3 full-size games?
Yes. I'm still on the first campaign. So like each campaign I heard is the size of Resident Evil 5, which is no slouch.
Yikes.
So there's 3 of them. And actually there's a bonus 4th one too. So,
the downloadable content after that.
Yeah. I mean, it really, I don't know, it's really kind of met with a lot of, people haven't liked it much at all, it seemed, or at the very best, it's a mixed review, but I've really been enjoying it. Plus, it only was $25 from, an insane Microsoft store deal, so I don't know, I'm into it. I have no loose, my only movie tie-in is to, that recent Resident Evil animated movie I reviewed.
I was going to make fun of it. Yeah, having seen it.
It was better than the live action stuff, but that is damning with faint.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but I would, I'd recommend it. But again, I'm a man of simple taste. So another man of simple taste, Mac McIntyre. What have you been up to?
Not too much. Been a slow week. Although I did make it out to the movies on Sunday. One of my favorite places in the world is the Brattle Theater in Cambridge, Mass, where it's like a revival house movie theater, and they showed a really cool double feature. The first film was Back to the Future, so I got to see it on the big screen.
Nice.
Which is really great, really played well with the crowd. And then I stayed for the second half of the double feature, which was Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
That's
very
cool.
Good. So, very nice.
How'd they tie it? Was there like a theme?
They're doing the 100 years of Universal Studios.
Oh, okay.
Are they, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I thought the theme was just some of the greatest movies ever made.
That too.
Are they showing them in 35 or is it digital projection?
Good question. I'm guessing it's off of film, by the looks of it. It's an older theater. It's an older place, so I don't think they're quite that high tech. But it's a great place, though, don't get me wrong.
Related news, I saw a deal on my deal shopping website. You can buy Marty McFly's hat from Back to the Future 2. the crazy neon one. I think it was $10 or something. But talk about being the most esoteric geek gift you can walk in.
Watching the two movies back to back, I was kind of noticing a lot of similarities. Because in Back to the Future, George McFly sort of, it's all about him finding his self-confidence and earning his self-respect. And then in Scott Pilgrim, Scott also has to sort of, earn his own self-respect, but in a different way. By collecting coins, yeah. He earns it very literally at the end of the movie. But there, I think George and Scott, they both kind of have similar journeys. I was seeing a lot of similarities between the two of them.
Nice. All right, anything else?
That's about it.
All right, that's what I like to hear. We're making good time already. Eric, what do you got?
Well, not a whole lot of like movies and TV. I've been kind of finishing up stuff I started talked about last week. Finished Being Human and watched a bunch of Key and Peele, but nothing new to report there. I'll add to the video game talk a little bit. I've been playing a game called Forza Horizon.
Now, how'd you end up with that? Yeah, did you get
it
that?
It was a $15 Black Friday deal.
I was very tempted, except racing games just bore me so much. But I heard that game's great.
I really have not played a racing game like this before. I mean, kind of Mario Kart was my speed for a long time.
Right.
So this is a lot more kind of sim-like. There are options. I'm kind of playing it like right in the middle, so I do have to worry about braking at the right time and not, you know, skidding out and stuff. But I'm not. I don't have to, you know, manually shift or anything crazy like that. But it's essentially like an open world racing game where you can kind of drive all around at least part of Colorado, and you're taking part of this Horizon Festival, and it's really fun because you have all these cars that they've gone in and modeled in great detail and got all the engine noises correct, which I'm not normally that big on. I'm not a big car guy. The game has actually kind of made me a little bit of a car guy. Yeah. It's fun. It's fun to like just to try all these different cars out. And
I heard it's beautiful too. I heard it's a beautiful.
Oh yeah, it's gorgeous. And just kind of driving from event to event, I find myself just kind of just seeing how fast I can go around these roads. And if you approach another competitor, you know, in general in the world, you can challenge them to a race right on the spot. You can go in and do all these other events. There are. Every once in a while, a little spot will show up on your map, and it's kind of a general area, and you drive around so you find a barn, and inside the barn is this old classic car that you collect, and you can have it restored and stuff. One of the first barn finds I got was an Aston Martin James Bond car, nice. Which is pretty sweet. So it's really fun. I'm surprised at how much I'm getting out of it, but I keep going back to it.
I saw that sale too. I saw that same. It was on there for forever too, $15. Marked up 60, so...
Yeah.
Oh, good to hear. Yeah, I heard it's good stuff. So nice. Daryl?
Not a lot of movie TV stuff for me. Some of the same stuff. Watched a little more Freaks and Geeks, but I will actually contribute to video games as well. So I'm gone back in the past to play Assassin's Creed 2, which I had never picked up.
That's a Mac favorite, right?
Yeah, I'm a big fan.
Mac approved.
I never played it because I played it. This time I decided to pick it up because Assassin's Creed 3 looked so intriguing to me. The whole subject matter and the ship fights and all that stuff seemed really intriguing, so I wanted to catch up on the story a little bit. But I never picked it up because I really didn't like Assassin's Creed, the original. I found it kind of repetitive. But I'm enjoying this one a whole lot more. I think the story's better told and there's a lot more variation in mission and stuff like that. But the one thing that still bugs me about it, and I don't know, Mac, you can tell me if this still exists in 3, the loading screens bug the hell out of me. I never know whether I'm supposed to run towards something or just stand there and wait, because there's nothing that tells you anything. And so I wind up always just running, and it always takes like 2 minutes. So that's the only thing about it that still carries over that I'm not a fan of about it, which admittedly is a very small nitpicky thing, but...
You're not the first person to make that observation. A lot of folks complain that the loading screen's gone for too long. As for being able to move around during the loading screen, it's just like a novelty. You're not really walking toward anything.
It's not – okay, so you don't have to walk for a certain amount of time to make it go. Then
no.
I can just walk away for a couple of minutes. That's fine. That's
you
good
just set
knowledge.
The controller down and, you know. And
that's good to know. I was never sure because it does take a little while. So eventually I just start running.
Nice. Now, we talked about this briefly, right, Mac, about the possible movie, right, the version.
It's underway, apparently.
Yeah, I'll ask you really quick. I know it's pretty renowned for its complicated mythology. Is it movie quality, you think?
My question is, what can they do in the movie that they haven't done in the game?
Yeah.
The game is so very cinematic already that anything I would want from a movie, I'm getting from the game.
Yeah, if they're just going to do the story in live action form, I think that's a waste of money.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right. Well, we'll see. And I've already said my piece about Resident Evil, so this was pretty much dominated by video games and Back to the Future. So it's good to be timely and subject oriented. So let's talk about stuff we've got going for the site. So, Mac, what do you got coming up?
Let's see, what have I reviewed lately? Oh, I just finished up my review of Paranorman.
That's right.
On Blu-ray.
A mixed experience for you, if I recall.
Yeah, it's hard to put into words because it really is a mixed bag. There's a lot to like about it. There's a lot of humor, and there's a lot of likable characters, and the stop motion animation is just gorgeous. But you know, it's sort of the emotional through line of the story is like off for me. You know, it begins with Norman and his friend, but then it shifts to being about Norman and the bully having to work together, and then it shifts again. It's about Norman and his sister trying to get along with each other. And then it shifts again. It's about Norman and his parents. And by this point, I'm like, well, what is this movie really about? You know? While this time, there's all the supernatural freakiness and the zombies, and that's where we get all the laughs from. But while all that's going on, I'm kind of lost as to, okay, so where's the overall, you know, arc of the story? And that's what kind of was lost on me. But if you're not interested in that, all you want to see is cartoon zombies, then, yeah, check out Paranorman.
Paranorman, nice. All right, Derek.
Wait, which one?
Derek. Who's Daryl? That's a combination of Daryl and Eric.
You sound like my dad. My brother's named Derek, so you sound like my dad right now.
Are we a celebrity couple?
You're officially a celebrity couple. Good to know. All right, Eric. I'm sorry. We'll go with Eric.
Okay. I'll knock it back to video games again for a minute because this week I'm reviewing Halo 4 Forward Unto Dawn. The live action Halo movie that they produced as a web series before the new game came out, and now it's out on Blu-ray all together in a full like 90-minute movie, and it's pretty impressive.
It's got its moments, but overall, a lot better than I think you would be getting.
Definitely, I mean we've talked at least you and I before just about kind of the general state of storytelling in video games, and it's getting better, but at the same time, you know, it's all kind of relative to other video game stories. If you compare it to, you know, your average to good to great movie, it kind of pales in comparison, right. Generally speaking. Video games are a little more limited, but, and this movie suffers from some of those limitations as well. You can tell it wasn't made for like the full budget of a full feature picture. So I think they cheat it in good ways. You know, there's a lot of scenes of people talking, or there's kind of close-ups to kind of mask some of the sets they didn't quite build out. And there's like one warthog that I think Weta Workshop built for the Neil Blomkamp, is that his name?
Yeah.
It's a while back. So they have all those pieces in there. And so for the first like hour of the movie, it's a lot of people talking, a kind of standard. Not terribly interesting story about these young recruits and this one guy who's kind of like a loose cannon and has to learn his lesson about, you know, teamwork and blah, blah, blah. But once it actually gets to the part where the action picks up, and there's a really great, like, last half hour where
– how did Chief look?
He looks pretty good. He's big. He's pretty imposing. You can kind of they built him up in kind of a weird way early on. There's this whole kind of almost mystery where one of the new recruits has tracked down this classified footage that he pieces together, and it ends up being this kind of like first person footage, and he catches a glimpse of freeze frames on one thing, and it's the Chief's helmet, and it's almost like Bigfoot footage or something. It's kind of weird, but once he actually shows up, it's pretty cool. I think people who like Halo will be satisfied by that, and there's actually some pretty decent Covenant action in there too. And again, they cheat it in interesting ways. Like there's one point where there's a Covenant elite, and if you don't play Halo, you have no idea what I'm talking about. But you know, Dave, you're in the know.
Yeah, I got you.
Or he's like an invisible enemy, which is, I guess, ties into the Halo fiction. But at the same time, it's like, okay, well, you didn't have to render that guy for this 5 minutes. Yeah. But it's I think overall it's definitely a step forward for video game movies.
Does it fit into Halo 4, which I know you're playing as well?
Yeah, it does, because it came out beforehand. There's not a whole lot that ties directly into the game, because they obviously weren't going to get into story spoilers at that point. It does lead up to the very beginning of the game, but most of it takes place as a flashback. Now, if for anyone who's played Halo 4, you know that story is pretty dense, and even after spending much time on Wikipedia trying to figure it out, I'm still kind of lost. That's definitely a game where the story is like way deep for fans. This is much more kind of top level.
Gotcha.
I think if you played any Halo games, you'll know enough to know what's going on. Even if you haven't, I think you'll be able to follow what's going on. You may not be as interested because you don't care that, hey, look, there's a battle rifle. But
Does it look nice on Blu-ray?
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's all shot in HD, and so everything looks pretty, there's a lot of, the close-ups of people's faces look really great.
All right. That's good. That's good. That's the important thing. All right. Excellent. Derek, again. I was going to make a slide joke, and I punked myself. Daryl, oh, what do you got?
Well, I've been mired in some pretty mediocre spaghetti westerns, all in anticipation, or not my personal anticipation because I don't personally care about it, but of Tarantino's Django Unchained. So Timeless, a division of Shout Factory, released two double features of Django movies, and there's like 20 to 30 Django movies that were made during the spaghetti western times, so yeah, and by plenty of guys, although Django and Sartana's Showdown in the West was directed by a guy who used the pseudonym, hang on, it's one of the best I've ever heard. Find it real fast. The guy's name is Demofilio Fidani, but he used the name Dick Spitfire to direct for this movie. So, oh, so there was that. And then the other thing that I've been doing, reviewing, I just finished up the series, was the third season and final season of the Sarah Silverman Program, which I like, but is very dependent on your tolerance for her comedy.
Gotcha.
The one interesting thing about that, though, that I didn't realize was that it was created by Sarah Silverman and Rob Schraub and Dan Harmon. And so then I was looking up some other stuff with them and realized that they were the writers, Dan Harmon and Rob Schraub were the writers of Monster House, which I never saw. And for a family movie, that seems kind of strange. But it will get me to finally see Monster House after all these years. So that was interesting information to me. Right. Sarah Silverman Program, this season, though, has actually a lot of really good guest stars, including what's his name, Ben Schwartz, John Ralphio.
Nice, yeah.
And Andy Samberg and Adam Scott and even Ed Asner as a Nazi. So you know, lots of good guest stars. I find it funny. I really like the cast, Jim Johnston and Brian Posehn and all those guys. So I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it for sure. But the show had pretty much run its course by then. So, you know, it's 10 episodes and works itself out pretty well.
All right. Nice. For me, let me tell you a little bit about something called Siberian Tiger Quest. You interested in Siberian Tiger Quest? What do you think Siberian Tiger Quest is about? Let me just ask you.
I think it's probably a reality show, maybe a game show where celebrities are pitted against
Siberian Tigers.
Oh, that's a little too obvious. I'm going to go with it's kind of a cross between Hoarders, Pawn Stars, and Real Housewives.
You're so close. You're so close. Actually, it's a... it is a PBS show, so one of those PBS nature programs, you know, about 50-odd minutes or so. And it's this guy, this biologist goes to Siberia, and I guess Siberian tigers are impossible to see in the wild. They're very, you know, very elusive, which is odd because it's just all snow, and they look like, bright, you know, they're bright orange tigers, but I guess they're still impossible to see. But he teams up with this Korean filmmaker who went to Siberia for like 6 months at a time, with the express purpose of catching one of these tigers on film, right? And he would do this by digging a hole. He would literally live in a 4 foot, like 4 foot by 6 foot foxhole tent thing, and he would stay there for months at a time, with his camera. And he would eat rice, and he would poop and urinate in that place. and just to catch sight of a tiger. And there'd be months and nothing would happen. And his assistant would come. How about this job for a research assistant? Talk about the internship that you regret. He comes to give him more rice and take away his waste. Like that's what this guy was saying. And then he would beg him to come home to his family. But no, this guy would stay put. So yes, he got footage of this tiger. Great. And that's great, I guess. But it was just, we're talking about minus 30 degree weather in this little hovel. And that is what he did. So, I don't know.
Siberia.
The tigers are less interesting than this guy. You know? I'll say that much. I mean, this guy is just remarkable and or insane. One of the two. I'm not entirely sure what it is. So, yeah. Siberian Tiger Quest. Recommend it just for a perfect study in human pathology. So. Now, a little change of plans, Mac. A little bit of a technical hiccup, so we don't have the upcoming releases for next week, so we'll just assume that they're awesome and or inadvertently sleazy. So
okay.
Please, so we'll skip this one and head right into ambush topics. So, Mac, why don't you kick us off?
Okay, first topic is heroes that tend to be cowardly or heroes that are easily frightened.
I'm going to go with Prince Adam.
Nice. Great one.
At least until he catches the power of Grayskull.
I mean, he's pathetic prior to that, really. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't really dress the part of imposing, you know.
No, but he does dress kind of like a dandy, so there's that.
Well, Cringer. Cringer, yeah. Too. I mean, he cringes. He literally cringes.
Literally,
and then he becomes
cringes,
Battle,
yeah.
Cat. So talk about going from beta to alpha. Yeah, that's a good one. Let's see. So, Mac, we're thinking about maybe cowardly heroes that turn into possibly, I mean, maybe they're initially cowardly. Is that possible?
That could work.
Okay. All right. Eric, you got anything?
Not yet. Now that you've narrowed it further, now I've got to give him a thanks. Thanks a lot.
Well, I try to expand it. I try to expand it, really. How about, okay, I'm going to go with Willow. Yeah, we don't talk about him as much, do we? We don't really talk about him. But, you know, he's very self-conscious and he doesn't trust his instincts as shown by the magic. The power in the world is in which finger trick that the head wizard did. So he doesn't trust his instincts and he sucks with his magic acorns. You know, he's not really great with that, but in the clutch, he'll come through and he'll do the disappearing pig trick and save everybody. So, yeah, I think we really see some good growth from Willow.
True.
I don't know about growth. I mean, I guess this is very low hanging fruit, but I'll go with Cowardly Lion from Wizard of Oz.
Oh.
Good. It's good.
Granted, it's just classic. The same word Mac used in the, but still, it's still a hero. He gets his, he gets his thing at the end.
His heart.
No, what does he get? He gets a medal. Right? He gets the medal for bravery or something.
It's the knife.
Well, he gets the knife. Obviously, he has the knife. I mean, you gotta have a knife, but, yeah.
All right, Mac.
All right. For mine, I actually went back to video games, so we're doing a real video game-centric show.
Good.
On my phone, I recently got the classic 80s game Dragon's Lair.
Nice. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, which used to be on this, huge cabinet in arcades with the Laserdisc technology that wowed everybody. And now it's on my phone, which is just, man. But anyway, the hero of that is, of course, Dirk the Daring.
Right.
And Dirk doesn't talk during the game, but he makes a lot of sounds. And whenever something happens, he just like shrieks in terror. He's like, ooh, ee, ah, really high-pitched, girly screams whenever something frightening happens. And he does it throughout the entire game.
Would you qualify him as daring?
That's the question, isn't it?
His dad was more daring.
he does venture into the Dragon's Lair, and he does keep on going. But other than that, I'm thinking maybe he's not that daring.
What was the Space Ace, right? Was that
Space
the,
Ace, yeah.
Was he more daring? Was Space Ace more daring?
Maybe after he transformed into Space Ace. He starts out as that little skinny guy.
Ah, right. Okay.
And you hit the transform button, and he gets all buff.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, speaking of Dragon's Lair, I actually still have a laser disc of Dragon's Lair.
No way.
For home use, yeah.
Impressive. Nice. I'll go next. So mine is really poorly placed villain lairs. Or poorly thought out locations for villain lairs. I mean, the James Bond catalog's got to give you just something.
Right, that's what I'm trying to mentally
All right, I'm gonna steer clear of James Bond at first. I'm gonna go with the underground lab thing. Pit of something in Princess Bride. What's it called?
Pit of Despair.
That's it.
Yes.
It is, you know, you have to open up this one tree to find in a forest full of trees. Imagine. Imagine, you know, you have a little too much mead down at the tavern, and, you know, you kind of lose your way. You drop your keys and those, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, you're gonna end up sleeping under some other tree all night.
In the book, they have to go into the tree, then fight their way through the zoo of death to get to the pit of despair.
Wow. All right. Yeah. I wonder if that was a deleted scene.
The octopus. Yeah.
Well, this one's kind of intentional. You know, it's a joke on purpose. But on the Powerpuff Girls, Mojo Jojo, the villain,
yes,
his secret hideout was right in the middle of the park that's right in the middle of the city. And it's like if the villain's hideout was just right in this middle of Central Park, this big metal tower. And you know, no one ever did anything. It's as if no one knew he was there, even though it was this gigantic tower right in the middle of the park in the middle of downtown.
Oh, he's lucky he lives in a town full of idiots, I guess.
That's true, and he certainly does, if you've ever seen the mayor.
Okay, so I'm going to have to go for with Bond stuff.
Go with it.
But, and I've mentioned it before in other things, but in You Only Live Twice, Blofeld's place underneath the volcano just seems really dangerous.
And difficult to build. You know,
difficult to get in and out of. Hidden, no doubt, but really not safe. Not safe.
Right, and the construction permits alone must have been.
Yeah, and it's in Japan, right? So there's earthquakes all the time. You know, it's not gonna go well. And of course it didn't in the end anyway, but, you know. Had he his druthers and survived Bond, I don't think he would have survived his lair.
Right. Right. Okay, I was going to go with our old friend, Mola Ram and his crew. You know? just thinking of kind of similar to what you're thinking, Daryl. Just how safe is it to live in those caverns, you know, with all that dust being kicked up by the child slaves?
Half your lungs.
The lungs, yeah, just so all that. I mean, like, Pat Roach was looking pretty rough there, you know, so I'm thinking he's got some serious black lung going.
Yeah, black lung's going to be a real problem.
The black lung's going to be really rough. And plus, just constantly surrounded by open lava pits, right? So, I mean, I'm thinking you're looking at potential lawsuits from thuggies all over the place. And, I don't know, just, I've always wondered, maybe I'm the only one who wondered this, but where do you think Mola Ram, like, what was Mola Ram's quarters? You know, did he get a sweet plush suite in the Maharaja's palace? Or did he have some kind of dumpy cell down there? I don't know, we never kind of saw that. So, yeah.
Good question.
Who knows? Mola Ram. What was his digs? I'm not sure. But I guess we'll never know unless we get Indiana Jones 5. Victor Mola Ram. Okay, Eric, go ahead.
All right, my topic is he should be dead. So something happens to someone, they really should have died. In real life, they would be dead.
Yes,
in the movie, they survive.
It's a great one we could spend all day. But immediately, John Matrix from Commando is dropped from the airplane still in midair. He lands on like a hill, and he bounces back, and he's fine.
I'm going to go with an old favorite, Michael Myers.
Oh, yeah.
At the end of Halloween, he gets stabbed in the eye with a coat hanger, then shot like five times, and then falls from a two-story building, and then there's nine other movies.
Nice.
actually, Dave, when you were talking about yours falling from a great height, that brought one to mind for me, which was Gus from Superman 3
skiing. Oh, yes.
Skiing down the side of the – because on the high rise, they've got their little mini artificial ski slope.
Oh, fantastic. Which
that right there has some logical problems. But Gus goes down the ski slope, goes off the edge of the sky rise, and basically skis down the side of the giant sky rise that's like taller than the Empire State Building.
Yes.
And manages to survive at the bottom.
Oh boy!
Without a scratch, even he just got scared.
Yeah, and he's like a dish towel wrapped around his neck for some reason, like a kid.
Right, because he was doing a bit about Superman. Yeah,
so terrible.
Really is.
Gus Gorman sucks.
It's really the worst. I mean, it's really worse than Superman 4. And
it is. It legitimately is worse than Superman 4.
Although it's funnier with Superman just straight up not giving a damn anymore. Dingy, kinky suit.
That beats Superman. Versus
5 o'clock shadow.
Yeah, versus Superman trying to save the Earth from himself, but in the process becoming a tyrannical dictator, so many good things. But yeah, so terrible.
Oh, God.
Like, how did that scene look on the page, hey, Mr. Lester, what do you think of this? This idea we've got.
It's really, really bad.
So bad, yeah.
Right. Are we waiting on Daryl still?
Yeah, Daryl, you got one.
Is that it? Okay, I'm going easy this time. Great flying machines of whatever kind.
Oh, did you do your He Should Be Dead one?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Oh, did Daryl, did you do He Should Be Dead?
Yeah, Michael Myers.
Yes, yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, all right, sorry.
Yeah, yeah,
Black
and over. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Eric. Wait, Eric.
So me.
Oh.
Let me do my, come on.
Save your breath or ambush topic.
Look at us arguing like an old married couple. Oh, it's funny. Anyway, yeah, so mine for He Should Be Dead. A while ago, a couple years ago, I saw Home Alone 2 for the first time and last time. Let's face it, I'm not going to watch it again. But like when it gets to the end with the wet bandits and everything, and it's so much worse than the first one. The stuff Kevin does to those guys, he's like chucking concrete blocks off the top of the building.
Ah.
It's like they should be it should be the bloodiest Rob Zombie movie ever at that point.
It's really a cruel kind of movie. Both of them are really
crazy movie. I mean, like the first one, I don't know. I don't remember anything. I'm sure. Again, I haven't seen that movie in a long time either. I don't remember anything that would actually like cause someone to like have their skull caved in. Maybe a paint can to the face, a broken nose or something. But like giant, whatever it is. But yeah, that was that's a crazy movie.
The paint can thing is actually a joke in an episode of Sarah Silverman's program from this season, where somebody's head does fly clean off.
All right.
Bringing all that. Okay, so fine. Okay, Daryl, honey,
fine.
Now you.
Fine.
Take us home.
Real easy flying machines of any kind, whether it's an air, in the air or space or whatever, just great flying machines.
Great flying machines. I don't know if it's great. I was always – I always thought the most useless Ewok of all the Ewoks, and they were all useless, was
the hang glider
Ewok. Because it makes zero sense in like such a dense forest canopy to start with. And then the payoff, once you fashion your once you work out the math and you fashion your aerodynamic gliders there, and then you – find a way to take off and dodge all the trees. The payoff is you're dropping two rocks on the top of the giant robot killing machine. And then you get shot down, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's implied to be one of the few Ewok fatalities, I think.
Could be, yeah.
So, totally useless.
The toy was fun.
Okay, I can see, that's really the point of the whole, obviously. It's the
yeah, obviously.
Return of the Jedi in its entirety, but.
All of the Endor ships are useless. I mean, the speeders.
Yeah, useless. Yeah, absolutely.
You're clearly like 90%. It's like a 90% fatality rate.
It's amazing that the Empire's R&D budget didn't include oversized tires.
Right.
if the hang glider Ewok had managed to drop his two rocks on two stormtroopers, he'd have taken out. Two of the stormtroopers.
Yes, because we do know.
Because even though with all their armor, rocks will take them out.
They're susceptible to rocks and sticks.
From the from of course the classic Star Wars game Rock Paper Stormtroopers,
where Stormtrooper always loses.
Yeah, right, exactly. Right. I'm gonna go with a flying machine from one of the great movies of the 80s. Dave, you can back me up on this. Young Sherlock Holmes.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. There's good a great one.
Flappy flying machine in that one.
Yep. Great movie of the 80s.
That's a great movie of all time. That's a great movie.
I've never seen it.
Can't do really? It. That's still
I've never
out.
Seen that.
I don't know. It's great. I'm not going to go quite the way. It's great. Really, it really is a great movie.
But it's generally...
Yeah. It's dark. It's cool.
It's those 80s movies that were out to, like, screw you, screw your mind up. Right?
Hey, I survived, right?
Kids F you up.
Yeah.
No, I still say that the lady who wrote Harry Potter, she saw Young Sherlock Holmes, and then she started writing.
Nice. That's why I want...
Well, probably.
I would love to see that settled in court.
We saw a young Sherlock Holmes and then grew up and then wrote Harry Potter like 20 years later. It was a while ago.
Sure. All right, Mac?
I guess I'll just go with the obvious, which is Batman's Batwing that he flies around in, his little personal stealth jet.
Yes.
Well, with the nail clippers in the front?
That's right.
That's right. Yes, can snatch up those... balloon strings really easily.
They were designed with one particular purpose. Because there's zero other point for them. Yeah, zero.
You could also pick flowers, I bet, if you flew really close to the ground.
You know what? That's an ambush topic right there. Give me one other practical purpose for that, those bat things. One. I don't care. Give me one.
Let's see. Maybe if the if somebody like the Mad Hatter has a giant antenna that he's using to mind control all of Gotham.
That's okay.
And then
there you go.
Fly along and use those pinchers to like snip the antenna.
So you would have to have save the Gotham. Biggest, most like obnoxious antenna, really. You know?
quickly mowing large fields.
I don't think it wouldn't be that quick. You know, every swoop, you get like three blades of glass.
Because remember the design; it's just the bat, so it's got these like.
Yeah.
You just got this narrow thing. Yeah.
Yep. All right, really coolly clipping.
I guess I'm gonna go with Nutcracker.
That's true. All right, so
just me?
Yeah. Yes.
All right, I'm surprised you didn't go with this one, Dave. It's probably lower hanging fruit for you. Airwolf. Did any of you guys ever read the webcomic Akewood?
No.
Very good. It's basically defunct now. But it's the story of the writer's child stuffed animals and their internal life when he's not around, and a couple of cats. And one of the cats is super rich, rich enough to buy Airwolf. And he actually buys Airwolf and Keith Moon's preserved head from eBay Platinum. A special division of eBay for the super rich. And so he gets Airwolf and it flies, but he's promptly very disappointed to find out that the missiles on board are made of styrofoam.
Ah, that's sad.
Yeah. But yeah, that's Airwolf is
it. Yeah.
Is a real badass machine.
Airwolf eats Blue Thunder's lunch.
Oh, completely. But Blue Thunder had its moments too, but they're not in the same league.
No. I'm sorry, if Dana Carvey's your co-pilot, you don't count as being a badass. All right, well, on that note, Dana Carvey piloting aircraft, let us end this edition of the Pride of Filibusters. So thank you for listening. We will see you next week. Have a good weekend. Mac, take us away.
Great Scott.